Hello, hello. Happy Thursday to you. My name's Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. You know it's cold in New York when it's really quiet during rush hour because not many people walk. Everyone has scarves wrapped around our heads and our mouth. It's really quiet. It's almost like when the snow is on the ground, you know, it kind of muffles the sound. There's no snow here in the city, but the cold muffles everybody up. You know, when New Yorkers don't have much to say, there's a reason. Because it's too freaking cold. Great show coming your way today. Going to be talking about the Super Bowl, not so much the halftime performance or Beyonce or anything of that nature. I'm going to talk about Cam Newton and Peyton Manning. Some aspects of their character I'd like to point out that I thought were a little bit deplorable. And let's talk about some ads that we need to spotlight in terms of featuring people with disabilities. And this is going to be fun. We're going to create a new league within the NFL. For all the guys who've been arrested, cited, you know, maybe we'll call it murder ball, with Johnny Manziel being the latest culprit. We're going to have some fun with that as well. And if you ever wanted to be in a fraternity or a sorority, but you never had the gumption or the time or the desire or the money, it's not cheap. Well, you can join like a frarority now. Yeah, no, it wasn't a slip of the tongue. Frarority. It's for the millennials, I guess. If you don't want to pledge, you don't want to pay. It's for the gay, the black, the straight, LGBT, fill in the blank. There's a spot for you. A Ferrari. I could just see the Ferrari house now. Everyone's sitting there drinking Starbucks and with their pads out. And yeah. Also going to be talking about what does music do for you. There's a new study out by the some very, very bright people at MIT. And you know, it's just one of those things that we don't even really think about sometimes. I mean, we grieve with music. We get married to music. We dance, of course, to music. We have sex. I love having sex to music. Oh, I'll move on from there. Don't worry. I'm not going to give you a visual or anything. But we do so much of our life is circled around music. And this is just not an American culture thing. This is widespread. I mean, you go to so many different countries. I don't know what countries, certainly off the top of my head, don't embrace music. I mean, think about South America, Canada. I'm sure they do. I want a sidebar here. One thing I love about Trump is that if he does become president, he said he will deport Justin Bieber. So there you go. Trump, you got my vote. But actually, I have to say I like his new album. So if he would have said this to me a year ago, I would have been like, deport him. Come on, get those papers drawn up. Let's pull up in front of his house, that mansion, because you know he's going to kill somebody one day when he drives 1,000 miles an hour down his driveway when he's all liquored up. But if we can deport him. But his new music is awesome, man. I have to tell you, it's great. I don't like looking at the guy with his hoodie, with his just like very immature attitude and the way he sounds when he's talking. He's so cocky, he's everything. But I don't know who produced his latest album. Jason, our program director, probably does. It was phenomenal. It still is phenomenal. So check it out. Anyway, so I want to start off the show. That's all coming your way. And also, I'd love to always hear from you. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Also, you can email me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. If you don't have a question or a comment, you can always tell me where you're listening because obviously we have listeners worldwide. Hopefully it's warmer where you are. Even if you're in Siberia, it feels like it's going to be warmer than here. Actually, it's dropping down to -0. See, now in New York, we can complain about this because we're not really used to this. My sister just moved to Chicago about 5 weeks ago. And it's like, this is the norm, 0, 5, minus 10, minus 15. I mean, that's no joke. Anyway, moving on. So there's always been an issue in the disabled community about how they're perceived, how they're written up in the media, what kind of TV programs, movies, how they're portrayed. And that's understandable. I totally get that. But what I don't kind of understand sometimes is how they don't like the fact when they're, when I say they, people with disabilities, and I can say that because I'm visually impaired, they are written up in more of like lifestyle pieces. And so, you know, I want to kind of address this today because I was reading some things over the weekend, like news stories about able-bodied people. Able-bodied people are, if you don't have a disability, that's what you are called, able-bodied. Able-B-O-D-I-E-D. People befriending, helping, and inviting people with disabilities to the prom. It just kind of like fills up social media. We know these stories are, they're heartwarming. People love them. They embrace them. And they may even like restore like one's faith in mankind. Hearing about these events is more pleasant than, you know, certainly hearing about what's going on in, with ISIS and bombings and murders and murder football and NFL. You know, you get my point. So these stories are also, they in a way belittle disabled people because the world needs to be more cognizant and kind of wake up and understand that disabled people are human beings. They are. We are. They are. And therefore have no less value than everyone else, their able-bodied peers. Excuse me. So that is getting a lot of traction lately. Actually, it always has, but I think there's a resurgence of it lately on social media. And I get it, because people want to be taken for who they are. So I'm visually impaired. When you see me, meet me, I don't look visually impaired. It's not obvious. I don't have a cane. I don't have a guide dog. It becomes obvious when I start reading something or if I need to, if someone's pointing someone out to me across the room, chances are I won't be able to identify them, identify people on their gaits, the way they walk, the clothes they wear, their mannerisms, big time. When I was in college, you know, the campus, when I went from high school to college, just like everybody or most people who attend college, you know, your environment just, you know, gets tenfold or even more in size. So spotting people was always an issue. So I always picked up clues on, especially in the wintertime, what color coats people had. That was always a great indicator of who was coming my way. So, you know, so some obvious, some disabilities are obvious, you know, and some are not. And, you know, also when I speak to organizations and schools and companies about the differences of obvious and not so obvious disabilities, it's very apparent that, you know, when we do know somebody has a disability, whether it's obvious or not, we treat them with expectations, right? So you think somebody, I tell people, so I'm visually impaired. You didn't think that before I told you I was visually impaired. You probably thought I played football, like a wide receiver or maybe a quarterback. And how many games do you think I won? How many touchdowns do you think I scored? People would be like, oh, 50, 25. Someone would say zero. I'd say zero is exactly right, because I never scored a touchdown in my life. I never played organized football because I couldn't get a blow to my head. It would detach my retina. So we do kind of surmise people's limitations. So if I'm visually impaired, you wouldn't think I was a certified scuba diver or jumped out of airplanes or flown glider planes or build really, really nice furniture. I do all that, operate heavy equipment. And yes, I actually flipped over a front loader last year. The person who even lent me this front loader doesn't even know it, but I flipped it over. My neighbor had to help me upright it, and I almost got really, really hurt. But anyway, so my point is, yeah, I can be idiotic when I'm operating heavy equipment, but that's a true story. So, but we do kind of have our own connotation or picture of what people with disabilities can do. So like articles write like girl takes friend in wheelchair to prom. In the comments section, you know, it spills over with phrases like, oh, what a sweet, sweet girl. Or what a lucky boy. It could be a girl taking a girl to her prom. And what these comments fail to notice is that they're kind of promoting the stigma against disabilities in society, because they're looking down at people. So, you know, why should or shouldn't somebody with a disability be asked to the prom or ask someone else to the prom? And they shouldn't accept because they feel like, oh, Johnny or Susie has a disability and I feel bad for them. No, you go with them because you like them, whether there's a romantic interest or not. So, and if an able-bodied girl, if you flip the coin, turn it on the other side, if an able-bodied girl asked her able-bodied friend to the prom, people wouldn't think twice about it, right? They wouldn't praise her for making her friend feel special. But instead, they just think that, you know, two friends are attending the prom together. So befriending or dating a disabled person, you know, it doesn't mean like you're lowering one's standards, as I was just alluding to, because, you know, people with disabilities are just people. They can be all kinds of things: bitter, entitled, happy, sad, sarcastic, intelligent, worldly, unworldly, uplifting, you know, just like everybody else. A wheelchair, you know, anything, a crutch, a walker, communication device, you know, that doesn't lessen a person's worth. The individual has worth based on, you know, character. I know you guys are out. You're bright. You get it. You're intelligent. You know, I mean, sometimes I think everything in life is about experience. I remember before my brother took his life 23, 4 years ago, that, you know, I didn't know anything about suicide except that high school paper I wrote senior year about suicide. You know, who doesn't write a paper on suicide? You know, it's kind of like the thing, the rite of passage, like you have to do it because it's just one of those papers that gets written. But I remember writing something, the last line that reverberates in my mind. As a matter of fact, I thought about this line like pretty much after my brother died. I'm like, oh my God, this line's coming back to haunt me. The line was, suicide is a permanent answer to a temporary problem. I came up with that line all by myself in high school. I thought that was pretty astute for me, since I really didn't do much in high school besides woodworking and try to, you know, be friendly with people. So my point is that, I'm sorry, I'm battling a cold here and I'm going to be doing this throughout the show. Hopefully you can bear with me here, that, you know, people have a lot of worth, you know, despite their disability. It doesn't matter. So it's time that people saw discrimination against disabled people, you know, like the same way they view discrimination against women, blacks, Hispanics, you name it, LGBT, you know, it's awful. You know, no one deserves to be treated or dehumanized, actually is a better word, based upon a trait that is totally out of our control. You think, you know, I asked to be visually impaired, or somebody asked to have a deformity, born with a one leg, or possibly without eyes, deaf and blind. List goes on and on about the possibilities that could go wrong. Even with this new virus that's going on, they're saying pregnant women, obviously pregnant, there's no pregnant men, so pregnant women are advised in this country or other countries not to get pregnant during this time because they're worried about birth defects. So the quality of a person is not, you know, confirmed or confined, rather, right, to his body, but the character and, you know, strength, wisdom, personality. You know, you judge somebody by their personality. And I totally agree on that. But where I differ, being a person with a disability, okay, do I have a major disability? No, I can get around. I don't bump into walls. I can drive a car with special glasses that look like a surgeon's glasses with telescopes on the outside. I can read. It takes me longer to read. It takes me, I get much more fatigued. I get tired. You know, navigating the web sucks for me. Reading my phone is a pain in the ass. All kinds of things. Like I get carpal tunnel because I had to sit so close to the computer and the way I type. Like all these different, they're inconveniences. Has it made my life different? Yes. As drastically as someone else's disability? Absolutely not. But, you know, we all deal with what we have, the cards we have. Like I just said, you know, no one asked for this trait. But I'm doing a little sidebar here. But, you know, the fact is, though, this trait of being born with a permanent visual impairment has made me a great person. Really has. Because I'd like to think I'd be this way, as compassionate and empathetic and just, I don't know. You know, it's also the way I was born. It's environmental in terms of just helping people out. I don't know. I just got a big heart. And sometimes I wear my heart on my sleeve. You guys probably figured that out since I've been broadcasting here for the last year and a half or so. That, you know, but I do believe, though, if I didn't have a disability, that I probably wouldn't be to this extent. I mean, we all know people in life that are, ruthless. Some people are just very curt. Like, they have no desire to help anyone out. It's all about me, me, me. You know, like after 9/11, it was nice in New York City because, like, the me, like, episode kind of, like, was put on the back burner. And it was great. Everyone was helping each other out. I mean, you know, everyone was walking around with like deer in the headlights. And I was like, well, if anything good came out of this, it's the fact that people are more receptive and welcoming and helpful to one another. And yeah, and you know, New Yorkers get a lot of bad connotations, but you know, in all, I mean, people are very, very helpful around here. So the point is, so I agree with all that, what I just said, obviously, because I said it. But what I don't agree about with, and I got to have someone in here so we can have a good dialogue about this. It's not going to be Trump, unless he's going to take Justin Bieber out. And he's got to, Trump's got to stop saying pussy on a national platform. He's just got to. If he thinks he's going to have a chance as president, come on. Are you kidding me? Who's advising you? Anyway, I digress again. So what I don't agree about with people with disabilities is the fact that they don't like being portrayed as a lifestyle story. So if you're watching, say, 60 Minutes or CBS, a news show or any, whatever your channel is, and they're like, coming up, hear how one man, say, came home from the war and his house is renovated by the community, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a feel-good story. I don't care how these stories are labeled or pitched or presented. The fact is they're getting coverage. And coverage is paramount. I totally agree that, you know, people need airtime, whatever the issue is, to help open people's eyes. So who gives a crap how it's labeled? Do you think somebody's going to say, oh, I saw a great lifestyle piece the other day? No, they're going to say, hey, I heard about this guy. I saw this on a show where, you know, he couldn't get up his second story apartment building and funds were donated and blah, blah, blah. And he's able to get up his house. Or his child has a severe condition and the community did X, Y, Z. There are countless stories and networks out there who, you know, could do a lot more. And there's actually a guest I'm going to be inviting. Actually, I spoke to her on the phone last night. She created Girls Got Grit. Girls Got Grit. It's a program, I believe it's only online, and they do great stories about people with disabilities. And we'll have that guest on. She's great. Dana, I don't remember Dana's last name right now. But Dana, if you're listening down in D.C., can't wait to have you on the show to also pick your brain about this. To my knowledge, Dana does not have a disability, but she's passionate about the disabled community. So again, to recap, I just don't have an issue how media labels, whether it's a newspaper issue title. Well, actually, I'll take that back. Sometimes the headings in newspapers are, you know, especially more the local ones, they do kind of do paint that heartwarming story. And it is, but it basically should be what it is. And I don't, the takeaway for me is never the fact that it's labeled as a heartwarming humanitarian story. Fact is, either some good or some bad is happening to somebody. And that's the reality. So, you know, let me know what you think. If you have a disability or not, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. So, yeah, the game is gone. All the 100 balls are, you know, packed up, crated. Everything's gone. Beyonce, the smoke is gone. Coldplay, all the stands are empty and the wrappers are cleaned up. But there's a few things I just want to address here. Number one, Cam Newton is a baby. And I know he's gone on record before saying that he is a sore loser. The reality is, when you get to this level, you know, you've been receiving so much training on and off the field, and certainly classes in proper etiquette, behavior, decorum. And when you do things on a national platform like that, just like Trump, you can be a politician, a sports star, a CEO, whatever the case may be, a parent. But when you do something on a national level that really gives viewers a taste of who you are, you should expect some backlash. So when he does like his, you know, the press, you know, when he does a press conference and he can be short and curt, et cetera, you know, that's the reality of it. That's who he is. And I guess we shouldn't expect more. But, you know, when he's just really unsportsmanlike on the field, you know, that sense sends a very, very powerful and clear message to so many kids and adults in different programs, sports programs, and even just to act in life, because they're just not giving a true depiction of how they are on the field. You think these guys act any differently off the field? And we're going to get into that, because I alluded to in the beginning of the show that, you know, I'm creating my own league here. It's going to be called Murder Ball or something like that in a few minutes. But it's just crazy that they can act like this. You know, here he is. Yes, I understand, Cam. You wanted, you came in with balls of fire. You thought you're really going to walk out a winner. You know, have a ring on your finger, being as young as you are. And great, all the power to you. But that didn't happen. And the fact that when you fumbled the ball, you didn't even want to jump on it? Come on. Really? What does that show? You gave up? That's your job. That's what you're getting paid for. Whether you're getting paid a lot or a little, even though you know he's getting paid a lot, that's just not cool. All right, moving on from Cam. Cam, I still respect who you are and the hurdles and adversity you've overcome in life to get to where you are. And I applaud you for that. But you got to work on your demeanor, man. So, Peyton Manning. All right, so there he is. He wins the Super Bowl. Whether you think it was a boring game or not, do you think he had many contributions to make this game a winning game? Should he go out? All those things we'll put aside right now. Here's what bothered me. And believe me, I'm a very liberal guy. You know, I've done a lot of things in my life I'm not proud of. But, you know, hey, drugs, alcohol, all that jazz, you know, just really, really insane things I've done, immature things, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is, I've always acted, I think, to the best of my memory, accordingly in situations where I could influence other people, especially kids. So here he is. He's on a national platform on the field. I forget what the reporter's name is. Cuker, I forget. She comes up to him, you know, how's it feel, blah, blah, you're going to retire. What are you going to do? Well, here's what I'm going to do, Peyton Manning says, and this is kind of the gist of what he said. Something like, I'm going to go hug my wife, my kids, et cetera, and go drink a lot of Budweiser. First of all, who says Budweiser? Nobody says Budweiser. First of all, if they do drink Bud, which I don't know anybody who drinks Bud, they say Bud. All right? The fact that you have to say, I'm going to drink a lot of Budweiser. All right, we know you're like a sponsor sponge. The whole family is Eli and yourself, Peyton. But that just is a bad portrayal for kids in the world to see and hear. You know, the most viewed television program in the world, and here you are drinking a lot of Budweisers. Listen, we get it. You're going to celebrate. We can fill in the blanks. I'm going to celebrate. You know, you didn't do the, I guess it was an approach of the Disney World thing. I'm going to Disney World. And that's cool because it's family, it's inane, it's safe, you know, et cetera. But all right, he did it once. Then now he's on a stage accepting the trophy and the speeches, et cetera. He says the same thing again. I was like, are you kidding me? Come on. Are you getting paid per mention? He probably is. But I would think of like the first family of football, the Mannings, you know, kind of squeaky clean. Of course, the evidence isn't totally out on the drug accusations, but I think he's going to evolve squeaky clean. Here he is saying he's going to drink a lot of Budweiser. Again, who talks like that? You know, he's getting paid big shekels to do that. Maybe that's why Eli was so pissed, because he wasn't mad that he didn't his brother won a game and he wasn't in the Super Bowl, or didn't he make it really deep into the playoffs, that's for sure. But the fact is that he wants that big sponsorship money, you know, the Dunkin' Donuts money that he gets and a bunch of other brands that he represents, because I can't believe he looks so crestfallen when the camera was on him multiple times. The whole rest of the family is embracing, cheering, you know, totally in jubilation. And Eli's like, I think my dog just died. You know, that's how he looked. But anyway, so that's the deal. So on a national stage, man, I just think it's inappropriate. Mentions him going to drink lots of Budweiser. Really? You know, just go celebrate. As I said, we'll go fill in the blanks. Crazy. All right. That's what I got to say. So I want to talk about some ads quickly. My favorite ad, actually, speaking of beer, was not Budweiser. It was Michelob. First of all, I didn't even know they still made Michelob. Michelob used to be the beer that I used to get when I was in eighth grade and freshman in high school, that we used to get someone to buy for us. Michelob. Oh my God, they still make it anyway. So, and actually, I think that's one of the best taglines in marketing history. Weekends were made for Michelob. Remember those? They should bring that back if they want to keep this brand alive. Anyway, so Michelob Light had a commercial. You would never have any idea in the first, I don't know if it's a minute commercial or 30 seconds, because, you know, when you're watching something very good or listening to something very good, you know, time is very hard to judge. So it starts out with all these different athletes, a weightlifter, a cyclist, a runner, a dancer, yoga, you name it. And everyone's going, it's all about breathing. And I forget what the actual tagline is, but I guess it's about breathing and staying fresh and staying light. Michelob Light. I thought it was a great ad. All the different athletes, you know, just greatly just enjoying their sport and connected totally mind and body. I thought that was really, really cool. That was my favorite commercial. Another favorite commercial, and this was really, really quick. You'd have to really be looking at this. SunTrust is it's an American bank, and the ad includes a girl with Down syndrome. It's very, very quick. I mean, the cutaways are like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So it's very quick. And a man in a chair, you know, only appear again for a few seconds at most. But nonetheless, you know, in the most televised show in the world, it's great for inclusion for the media. So now, am I in the disabled community? Am I doing a disservice for mentioning this? See, I want to get somebody in here to challenge me on this, because I want to know the, not so much the protocol, but what is viewed as proper or not. Because I think, you know, the spotlight should be on people who are included in commercials, because obviously that's a major campaign. They paid millions of dollars to have that in there. And so I'll take a stab at this, maybe out of the, oh man, maybe 30 or 25 people that were shown in this, you know, quick commercial, two people had disabilities. I think that's kind of cool. Don't you? Yeah. So that's it for me. You know, I won't talk about too much about the Super Bowl halftime, you know, the Coldplay halftime show starring Beyonce, you know, all that stuff. I thought she was good. Coldplay, let me tell you something. I love Coldplay. Does her energy match up? You know, it's different. You know, there are different groups. Everyone brings something different to the table. Everyone was great. I thought the audio mix was horrible. It was atrocious, which had a big impact, I think, certainly on Coldplay, a band that's a little bit more mellow and in terms of energy level to pair it, compared to Bruno and Beyonce. But, you know, besides that, and also, did you hear this? This is wild. And this is a case in point of me having really bad eyes and great ears. And also, I'm sitting 2 feet away from the TV. There was a hooing sound through like 80% of the game. And I'll try to do it justice. It's like, as annoying as that, throughout the home, my wife was like, what is that? I'm like, this is driving me crazy. And also, I've been in so many audio trucks mixing audio for live shows. I mean, once I would have heard that 3, 4, 8, 10 times, I would have pointed that out to management and they would have found out, you know, which live mic they're using for an audience mic, gotten that person out of there, upgraded whatever them, given them free Budweiser to drink after the game with Peyton, whatever it takes to get that damn woo to stop. It was driving me nuts. It was nails on a chalkboard. Holy shit, it was driving me nuts. But I couldn't turn a game off, even though I wanted to after the third quarter. So anyway, I've been thinking about this. You know, certainly lately with Johnny Manziel, you know him, and you may remember him because he was the first college freshman to win the Heisman Trophy. But certainly you know him as the NFL QB, who for years has seemed to like never been able to like get his shit together. So here's the deal. Reports say that the Cleveland Browns lied when they said Manziel had to miss the final game of the season due to concussion symptoms, reportedly to cover up Manziel showing up drunk. What a surprise. Whoa. Let the media know. The Browns claim the reports about their alleged lies are lies. What? Am I confusing you? Well, I'm confused. So get that. Meanwhile, earlier this week, a lawyer for Manziel's ex-girlfriend / punching bag spoke out about a criminal investigation. I'm not making light of that, but I mean, I'm making light of the fact that another NFL player is doing something very, very violent. into the footballer. So last month, Manziel allegedly hit his now ex-girlfriend so hard that her attorney says she still can't hear out of one ear. That's pretty hard. So Manziel has denied any wrongdoing, of course, blah, blah, blah. Now ex-girlfriend has a protective order against the shiny boy quarterback because he's, you know, such a stand-up stellar guy. So, of course, the Browns are reporting consistently, or they're considering, I should say, dropping Manziel from the lineup. Do you think that would be a good decision? Well, you know who's going to pick him up after you drop him. He'll go to Dallas. Yeah, Jerry will pick him up. So, yeah, and his agent dropped him. So he's got nothing going on. But I'm sure, you know what? Here's the thing, and I touched upon this last week. Here's the thing that really kind of stupefies me is the fact that you've worked, talking about NFL players here, so incredibly hard from wherever you're from, starting in Pee Wee, high school football, get into college, whether you play 4 years, 1 year, 2 years, but you've given up so much time, so much energy, injuries after injuries, and you get to the NFL. The pinnacle of sportsmanship for football players. And the NFL is an acronym. I've interviewed a lot of NFL players, and they always say the acronym stands for not for long because of the shelf life of the human body and also because you're a commodity. If you don't produce, boom, you get out of there. I forget the turnover per year, how many players there are, hundreds per year. The turnover, I never realized it was that big, but hundreds of players per year are turned over. You only hear about the big ones retiring, of course, but the guys who are, you know, third string or second string, you know, who don't get, you know, the glory that they should, like actually the Broncos defense. Like, you know, if I asked the average person to name like three players on a Broncos defense, you think they would be able to? No, but they're the best defense in the league. Incredible. So the thing is, so you work so hard to get there, man, and then you just F it all up. Now, we know that, you know, people come from all walks of life, different backgrounds, maybe a broken family, really bad role models, no role models. But you would think that in the environment of, you know, the brotherhood of football players and coaching staff and people who serve as mentors to these guys, they would, I'm sure, and there's so much stuff I'm sure we don't hear happening. You know, the new show on, is it Showtime, Ballers? With The Rock, who I don't know why I'm going to say this, but I read this the other day. Apparently, he's going to have a full frontal on the next season, which is coming. Anyway, it's a great show, but you know you can see what happens in the NFL. So, Jesse's on the controls. Tell our program director to come in here, Jason, because I want his input on this upcoming segment I want to do here. Because hey, Jason Taubenfeld is the program director here at PRN. And he's a great guy, and we've been at a few radio stations together, and always fun to have Jason. Jason, is it fair to say you're kind of a sports, well-informed dude?
Yeah, I definitely feel that way.
I don't think your mic is on here.
Yeah, do you hear me now?
No, I think you're wrong. The other mic is on. Here we go. Process of elimination here.
Hey again.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, there you go. You're live.
I love sports, Mark. I love sports.
Yeah, I know you do. So here's the deal. Here's what I'm thinking about. You know, Okay. You've heard of Murderball because we can't take that title. But I'm thinking about, you know, all the different arrests that have happened throughout all years. Actually, in 2015 alone, I think there was 60 or 70 arrests. It's not all people were arrested. They were cited sometimes, right. You know, prosecuted or not. But, you know, so I'm thinking about – so the Pro Bowl sucks, right? Who watches the Pro Bowl? You can do all you want the NFL move. It used to be after the Super Bowl, right, the week after because, yeah. But then they figured, okay, the effervescence, the energy, the synergy for football is over. Let's move it over. Move it up a week. So it's in between the two-week period between the championship game and the Super Bowl. But it still sucks. Nobody watches it. Nobody wants to get hurt. Who blames these guys? You know, they don't get paid, right? They get a free trip.
No, they get a pay. They each get a salary. Winning team gets like $50,000. The other team gets like $30,000. It grows each year.
So Budweiser money if you were paid.
Correct. Exactly.
Okay. So here's the deal. So I'm thinking about let's create a team. So maybe if somebody gets cited or arrested, they go to this team.
This might be the best team in the history of
football. Yeah, exactly. No kidding. Also, like, it reminds me of like when you're a teacher in New York City, and I could be totally a little bit off on this, all the details, but when a teacher gets suspended You know about this? They still have to go to work.
Yeah, they go into the white room.
They
right?
go to a white room. It's like being a full day suspension.
They love it. They hang out there. They play on their phones and
with
whatever.
With other mm-hmm. teachers who are waiting, whether it's counsel or hearing or whatever. So here they are just sitting in a room getting full salary.
100%. Okay.
Whether they were probably cited with maybe groping issue or tardiness, whatever the case may be. All right, so
it
I digress.
Lasts forever sometimes.
So here we go. So quarterback position. Now this is far from like a fantasy NFL team, but you know, exactly ex-con. You know, dog violence or animal cruelty. How you want to do it? Okay, so domestic violence violators is wide receiver. Who would you put there?
Wide receiver, I mean, you got Plaxico Burress.
Oh, yeah,
who's
Plaxico.
In there. He's amazing. Sam Hurd, who is a Dallas Cowboy, Chicago Bear, who's cocaine trafficking.
Didn't Plaxico just announce something last week?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Or did he just, he's going to be free agent? Something just came out about him.
I think he's done with football at this point.
All right, now
I think, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think we have the best running backs in the country. I mean, look at this. OJ, Joseph Randall from the Cowboys this year.
You're right.
David Megan from the Giants. There's tons of running backs in prison, so they're just going to bust through everyone.
You know what? This is funny. We were talking about this before. It reminds me of the movie
The Longest Yard, yeah.
Which was great with Burt Reynolds.
Great movie.
And redone, 5 years ago, 7 years ago?
With Sandler, and then Sandler had Michael Irvin in it and a whole bunch of other guys.
I think there's something here.
Oh, yeah. Look at our tight end, Aaron Hernandez. Come on. I mean, no one's going to cover him.
No,
I mean,
he's
scary.
Exactly.
Scary.
Oh, my God. I mean, if you have a gun violation
or
you're a rapist.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, just look at – and then the defense.
Do you want a rapist standing behind you?
Oh, no. You know? Not on a football field in those outfits.
Imagine if you're a center and the quarterback's charged with rape.
Thank God Ben Roethlisberger's not the quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
He could have been up
there,
right.
too. Oh, my God.
That
this boggles my mind.
Well, and then offensive line, Nate Newton from the Cowboys, drug trafficking. He went to jail for a few years, 7 years.
Oh,
and tax fraud.
7 years?
Yeah, for all that, it's
tax
crazy.
Fraud. Hey, we can overlook that. NFL, that's nothing, man. That's like a sneeze.
And then our defense, I was looking at it. Our defense, Dexter Manley, linebacker for the Redskins, and he's amazing. You had Hollywood Henderson from the Cowboys, who was a great linebacker.
What did he get arrested for?
He was cocaine possession, and I think also like trafficking. So they're all bad boys. There's a lot of good players in there.
So let me ask you, Jason. I mean, you're a well-read guy. What do you think? You're much more sports head than I am. Why do you think these players, NFL, any pro athlete, can't help themselves from getting into trouble?
A lot of it is they don't want to lose their roots. They feel like they grew up in a certain environment, and if they get all bougie or something, they don't feel like they're part of the community. So they say, I can still hang out with the boys on the corner, and not realizing they're millionaires now. They don't need this. So they decide to go back and act, I guess, tough or cool. Then they do something stupid and end up in jail.
Don't you think, though, they can? Their great way out is to say, hey, listen, I'd love to be able to do X, Y, and Z and be a gun-toting, you know, whatever, center-carrying, crazy nut football player. But I don't want to lose my gig. If I lose my gig, you can't hang out in my crib.
Unfortunately, you see, that's the way they should think. But, you know, when they're growing up in a different environment or a different way, they're like, hey, I got to act a certain way. I have to be true to myself. And it's ridiculous. You know, you got a great opportunity here. Why ruin it? Why? Like to hang out on the corner? Come on. It's ridiculous. It's just bad. You know, maybe the education wise, they were spoiled all their life. You know, in high school, they're the coolest guy in school. In college,
it's their bubble. They're in that bubble.
It's a bubble. Yeah, it's perfect. Exactly.
So what do you think? I'm going to go back to the Peyton Manning thing. What do you think about his statement about drinking a lot of Budweiser's?
It was the
Did
weirdest
it bother
thing.
You as a father?
It didn't bother me. I just thought, like you said, who says Budweiser?
Yeah.
That was the only thing I kept thinking. I was like, how corny are you? I was
and
like,
a lot. He had to put a lot in there.
And you know, I know he owns distributing plants. You know, he doesn't own like actually. He doesn't have like
Budweiser.
He has
no kidding.
Yeah, he does that like in St. In Denver. He got two of them. Like Roger Maris had in St. Louis. They gave him Anheuser, gave him some. So that's where he's going to make his money. You know, so.
Oh, he's done. I mean, in terms of he doesn't have to worry about another dime in his life.
Course,
I mean, he can be a commentator. Or he can rep, you know, so many different faces of so many brands.
Everyone wants him. I mean, Fox hired his older brother, Cooper, last year just to give him some baloney segments,
to
do, just hoping that Peyton will come out in the long run.
So it's an interesting world. What about Cam? What do you think about his unsportsmanlike behavior?
So I have to disagree with you. Cam Newton, my son's 7 years old. He plays flag football tackle. He got so excited watching Cam Newton every week because this guy is an excellent football player.
Oh, I agree about the excitement part, the celebration part, everything.
But I am a bad loser myself. But you know what? He feels it. If I'm a Cowboy fan and if Tony Romo came out like that, I would love him because I'd be like, yes, he's going to come back harder next year and try. He has to prove himself, and I love that, and I want him to prove himself. I understand it didn't look great, but you know what? He was hurt so badly for losing that I respect that. I know he was upset. I know it wasn't what everyone wanted to hear, but he was really hurt. And you know what? I think he's going to come back stronger next year. You better watch out. You know, he's only going to get better.
I have no problem listening with a grown man crying like a little baby on the sideline. I have no problem with that. No, because it shows, you know, how much of your heart is into the game.
Yeah, he quoted Lombardi. Totally. He quoted Lombardi, you know, yep. on Tuesday when he was like, yo, show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser, you know?
Exactly. Or whatever the, and absolutely. And I think it's so true. I just don't like the antics on the field, like even for like not going for the ball. I mean, come on, that's your job.
And that was a weird play. That was weird. I'll give you that. I thought maybe he thought DeMarco Ware was going to go two over it. It was not the best play.
I don't think he's going to live a lot of that stuff down. But I think we got a good potential team here, my friend.
Yeah, I think we can start up. Maybe we'll start writing him in.
Hey, listen, we got something and we're changing gears right after the break here. We're going to be hearing a nice story about Starbucks right after this on Insight.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Have you ever listened to Anthony Robbins, watched the movie called The Secret, or read about the power of positive thinking from the perspective of any of the many fine authors who have written about the subject? They all focus on the law of attraction, which governs every second of every life of every person in the universe. Like attracts like, and everything you do, feel, and think about as a regular way of being determines your life experiences. PRN's new show, LOA Today, explores all aspects of this magnificent law of the universe every Thursday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. Join hosts Walt Thiessen and Ioana June Thiessen as we explore the law of attraction each week. That's LOA Today, Thursday evenings from 7 to 8 p.m. here on PRN.
It's the VR. You know what's next.
It's a bowl of soul. Tune in and get your dose of classic soul and independent R&B music from the United States and abroad on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A Bowl of Soul is a music experience you won't forget or regret. Check out A Bowl of Soul on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Paul Capilcante, host of The Vinyl Experience, and you're listening to PRN, your source for the best in progressive conversation, news, and entertainment.
Feel that? Ah, goosebumps? Wait for that note. There you go. Right here, right now, Van Halen. There's a new report out by MIT we're going to talk about in a few minutes about the effects of music on the brain and how it makes you feel. Jesse, crank it up. Love it, love it. It reminds me of when I jumped out of a plane. Yeah, I jumped out of a plane a couple years ago, and I paid for a video, which I was so happy I did. I was like, oh, I don't want to pay $200 for a video. But when they gave me the video, the soundtrack they put to it was this. So I love it. I get goosebumps when I hear it and think about it. So we're going to be talking about the impact of music on the brain in just a few minutes. But I wanted to let you know about this Starbucks story. And it's really kind of interesting. I'm going to read this to you because it's basically what one Starbucks barista. How did that start? Because they're just too cold to be called the Starbucks coffee maker? Anyway, sidebar. One Starbucks barista didn't know when she wrote a smile on someone's coffee cup. So now I'm not a Starbucks person because, number one, I don't drink coffee. I love, absolutely love the smell of coffee. I could live for that. As a matter of fact, I have actually been known to make coffee. I don't really know how to make it in terms of tasting good. But just because of the smell of it. But then again, I like to smell gasoline, but I wouldn't drink that as well. I mean, I have tried drinking, not gasoline, coffee, but I have to put so many different ingredients in it, you know, that, you know, I'm sure like nitrogen or, you know, no, we need something more liquid here. So whatever form of poison would taste good if you put enough sugar and stuff in it. So my point is that I don't drink it, but I love the smell of it. So I don't really go there too often. But when I do go there, it does have a cool convivial environment. It's warm. It's cool. You got all the hipsters hanging out, checking out the Wi-Fi, man. You know, and paying for that $7 cup of coffee. And I don't speak Starbucksese. And I can't read the menu because I'm a blind MF-er. So I'm always like, can I have a medium tea? Would you like mocha laka, floca laka laka, luka 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 laka? I'm like, just a plain Lipton tea. We don't have Lipton tea, they say. I'm like, oh, man, shit. Anyway, so so they're called baristas. So anyway, this is written, and I read this online the other day, and I wanted to bring this to your attention because the woman who wrote this is someone who suffers on many levels. And here's her story. Dear barista, you didn't know me, and you don't know me, and my story. Most importantly, you probably didn't know writing the simple word smile on my order would change my day for the better. When you look at me, you might assume I'm happy, bubbly, outgoing, and full of life. I sound like Casey Kasem reading this, don't I? But you don't really see the complete me. You wouldn't know that behind this plastered smile is a girl who has broken and fallen to pieces many times. You wouldn't know this girl had so much self-hate. She starved herself for over half her young life. This is sad stuff. Or that she tried to end her own life 5 times. I'm guessing you didn't know these past few weeks and that the day particularly had been extremely hard. You were just going about your job unaware that just writing a minuscule word on my drink would change my day and possibly my life. Maybe you wrote smile on my drink because you saw the feeding tube. Or maybe you could see past my fake smile because you've been where I am. Either way, I'm grateful. You didn't have to make my order special. You could have treated me like any other annoying Starbucks customer. I threw in a Starbucks there. But you took the extra second to add some positivity to a life that's been filled with so much negativity lately. You see, my day consisted of a horrible doctor's appointment and a horrible therapy session. I was filled with hopelessness, and my suicidal thoughts were getting worse. She had a day. Bad day, you see? When my anorexia is bad, sometimes coffee is the only thing I can drink. But I was afraid to consume even coffee that day. If I hadn't encountered that cup, I could have done more damage to myself that night. When I read that word, I couldn't help but smile. Literally. I smile. A simple act of kindness can mean the world to someone. It can provide hope for the hopeless, and now I plan to pass this hope along. So, barista, thank you. Thank you for turning my day around. Now, I have the woman's name here, and I think that's irrelevant. I mean, if you're really interested in learning more about the story, you know how to find it. It's a thing called Google. But the point is that, and I read a little bit about the author, and this is the woman who had the word smile written on her cup. She's young. She's gone through a shitstorm in life. And the fact that, you know, someone took time just to do something of the smallest nature really has an impact on people. And I'm a full believer of this. I'm a total, my wife actually calls me, actually one of her friends started calling me this, Dudley Do-Right, years ago. And believe me, I always don't do the right thing. You know, I make mistakes, certainly, and a ton of them in the past. But I'm always like, even during a winter storm, like 2 weeks ago, there was a guy walking down the road. I mean, the wind's blowing sideways. I pull over and said, hey, get in. I didn't ask him where he's going. I take him to the grocery store. And as I'm driving, I'm saying, you know, the grocery store is not going to be open. He's like, well, I didn't have any money yesterday, so I got food stamps today. So we go to the food store. It's closed. And he's like, well, the drugstore is open. Then he comes out. And anyway, I give the guy money. You know, he's got a kid. Anyway, so I'm always helping people out. Even this morning. You know, when you're a few steps away from people, as I said to you before, it's really cold in New York today, and it's not going to get any warmer next couple of days, but I'm a few steps to somebody, and I hold open a heavy door, and there's a guy coming up behind me a few steps away, certainly more than capable of holding a door, but I hold the door because, you know what, it just kind of sets the tone for your day. Who knows what his day was like before he got to that particular point in time where our lives intersected. Now, I'm not trying to get all crazy, wacky, holy, powerful, you know, higher power type of thing. But I just believe in just helping people out, doing the right thing. whether it's, you know, I know a lot about construction. I always help people out, my neighbors, you know, I do things for them. Sometimes they do things for me. My cousin's away for a month. I watch his house. I do things. I help strangers all the time. I volunteer. And we all have different things we can do for people. And I think that's just great. And so even though, and maybe this woman puts a happy face on everyone's cup, smile. Maybe she gets to work in 10 minutes early and just writes smile on like 100 cups that day. Who knows? But the fact that it just really had a huge impact on this girl's day. I mean, she had suicidal thoughts that day. She was feeling very, very, you know, uncomfortable in her own skin, it sounds like. She has a whole host of array of problems. But a little gesture like that. And I say this because, you know, we're all capable of doing the simple things that turn into great events. So, you know, the next time, you know, you're doing whatever, whether you're at a green light and somebody's trying to make a turn and nobody's letting them stop, or someone needs help with directions on a street, or someone's speaking a language that you know a little bit of and you can help interpret, or hold the door open for somebody, or get food for somebody, smile at somebody, the smallest little thing, you know? Pretend you like your coworkers. You know, I really don't like Jason Taubenfeld, the program director here, but I know he knows a lot about football, so I had him on and made him feel good. Oh, shit, he's listening, isn't he? Anyway, so that's my point about Starbucks. We're moving on here because we're almost out of time. So music. I want to hear a good piece of music here, and Jesse's going to cue up a piece. Rihanna. I like her for many reasons. Her music is one of them. So there's a whole new piece out. It's called The Music Channel. New research on a pathway in the brain dedicated to all kinds of tuneful stimuli. So, you know, as Americans, we listen to all kinds of music for, actually, I think the study says 4 hours a day. That's a long time. It could be on your commute, drown out your neighbor's city noise. You know, if you're going to be getting down, especially this weekend, Valentine's Day around the corner. You know, it's certainly ranked as one of the most supreme sources of pleasure in emotional power. And here's another tune for you. Now, many of you may not know this song. It's called, actually, Possum Kingdom from a band called the Toadies, T-O-A-D-I-E-S. But when I used to work at this rock station, when this song used to come out, I don't care what kind of day I had, I would just take my headphones off, turn the master control volume up to 10, and just sit back, and this would validate what I did for a living. Now, you don't have to know the band or the song to feel it. And maybe that doesn't work for you. But you all have music that works for you, right? I mean, it alters mood. You know, it can help you prepare for an event. So sometimes when I walk into colleges, you know, I crank tunes. I have my MP3 player or my phone or whatever, and hook it up to the soundboard. And then, depends on how capable the person is working the sound, I'll have them bring music in and out. Because, you know, music really sparks thoughts and memories and creates great memories and just really gets people energized, like at any sporting event. You know, whether it's 3 seconds between a play, 10 seconds, you know, you hear AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, some new classics as well, and it really, really helps. So this study really proves, and I can't go into detail because I don't have much time, and also there's a lot of boring evidence, but the fact is, if you're not having a good day, or even if you want to make it better, it's proven that music really, really works. I mean, music is on commercials. Obviously, that started about 10 years ago, this trend where popular music, I think it started kind of like in the Gap commercials and Old Navy, were actually taking really hit songs and creating new versions of them, remixes, you know, which were very, very cool. So what does it do for you? I mean, I love it for sporting events. You know, a driving song. This is one of my preferred driving songs by the Cranberries. You know, tell me you wouldn't love to drive to this. So when the officer says to me, Mr. Farrell, why were you driving fast? Well, listen to this. Jesus Christ. It's the Cranberries, man. You got to drive fast to this. This is a balls out song when you're driving. And there's all kinds of great songs. We just picked a handful real quick this morning. just to prove to you that, you know, how it alters your mood, man. It really just sends the, like, synapses and euphoric parts of your brain into drive, you know, if you're kind of stuck. I mean, my past job working as a creative services director, I used to sit in a soundproof room all day long and just make music pieces for promos, concert spots, etc. So imagine getting to, let's pick an artist like Coldplay, go through like 30 of their catalog and pick out like the best songs, like Yellow right here, you know, arguably one of their biggest trademark notorious songs. So, I mean, you feel a little something there, right? Absolutely. So, yeah, I had some great jobs where I was able to just, you know, make music all day long. And so whatever you do for a living, whether you're an accountant, an actor, whatever your case may be, corporate America, you know, give yourself the joy of music, man. At nighttime, my son turns on a stereo and goes, "Dad, you want some jazz music tonight?" I said, "Yeah, Dad. Son, I want some jazz music." And that's what he does. Gives me some jazz music. So lastly, Ferrari. Okay, I remember when I was in college, I started my own fraternity because I could, because I didn't want to pledge for all the other ones. I figured, okay, if I could be part of fraternity that I start, it wouldn't have to be like the, you know, the typical testosterone-filled fraternity. So it was kind of hard to start a fraternity on a campus. It was a national fraternity, and I actually forget, Phi Kappa Tau actually was the name of it. And very quickly, due to time, I had to open the pledges. So pledges didn't have the pledge. So if you just want to sign up. So basically, I kind of thought it was like a misfit fraternity. And so I kind of bowed out like maybe 4 or 5, 6 weeks into it because I really wasn't into it, because everyone else was into it. Like, yeah, brotherhood and all that stuff. I'm like, listen, I just want to have a good time and have beers. Not Budweiser, drink beers. Not like Peyton Manning. I just wanted to have a good old beer, okay? I'd buy the keg and have women over and just have beer with a few guys and more women and guys. So anyway, Ferrari is the newest trend, and check it out. It's taking campuses by storm, and that's kind of a cool thing. And lastly, you know, the big day, you know, Valentine's Day, you know what it's all about. If you're in the area, you know, they have like kind of like stupid Cupid events. I know in Hoboken, New Jersey, they're going to have a stupid Cupid event. And Jesse, give me one of those songs to take us out on the show here. They have all kinds of events. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a holiday. It's a ridiculous holiday. But maybe it's just another reason to play good music and tell the person that, or people in your life who you love, that you love them. This show is dedicated to Ed Lewis. May you have a better life the next one around, because you had a damn good one here. My name's Mark Farrell. The show's Insight. Gary Knowles next. Enjoy. Enjoy.